Oh yeah, get some of this. Don't you dare call it a comeback, because the Brian Campbell has been here for years by popular demand. It's the debut episode of In This Corner with Brian Campbell on CBSSports.com, where each week I'll be injecting a syringe full of performance-enhancing audio right into your eardrums. No need to clear with USADA. It's just time to sit back and get juiced. Now, you may know me from a trio of combat sports podcasts of old, but this right here, this is something new, like Hollywood Hogan putting on the black and white. It's a new world order at CBS Sports. What you can expect with this pod, episodes devoted to boxing, MMA, and pro wrestling with interviews and names you already know. But today's episode, we are all about WWE, just days removed from the completion of what they call a superstar shakeup on Raw and SmackDown a week after WrestleMania 3. We're here to break it down in this corner to help me, a name you'll get to know very well in the coming weeks and months. The Hall to my Nash, the Breeze to my Dongo. Yes, yes, I went there. CBS Sports editor, writer, and Florida Gators football apologist, I might add, Adam Silverstein. Adam, like former Cruiserweight champion Rich Swann, can you handle this?
You know, I sure hope so. If we're going to be talking about syringes in the first segment, you know, we'll have to see how that goes throughout the rest of this show. And this is episode one already. But hey now, happy to be here and ready to talk some wrestling.
Absolutely. If you'll allow me to stay on the subject of college football for five more seconds before we get into the week that was in WWE, who had a more memorable career as a Florida Gator in your eyes, Titus O'Neil or Cam Newton?
Titus O'Neil had a more memorable career, considering Cam Newton, for the most part, threw a couple passes as a backup and then threw a laptop out a window. So I'll go with Titus O'Neil, Thaddeus Bullard. I'll go with him, absolutely.
Yeah, I love the laptop reference right there. Yeah. This week, we'll jump right into it. Our first segment, the main event, where we cover the biggest news of the week, the biggest things that's happening. You look no further than that superstar shakeup, both Raw and SmackDown resetting the rosters. I thought that this would come more toward the summer. We're 9 months into the latest brand extension, which started with the draft last July. But 1 week after WrestleMania 3, Adam, this really seemed to make a lot of sense. I thought it was a success. I want to ask you straight up, which brand was the winner after the changes we saw?
You know, I came out of Raw thinking that WWE was going to screw SmackDown over again. Like, that's kind of how it felt to me. You know, when you get Wyatt and then the Intercontinental title all of a sudden on the quote unquote number one show, that's what you think is going to happen. It just seems like, oh, here we go again with the draft. We're all getting that extra pick and, you know, getting a lot of the younger guys. We're heading in that direction. But I was really pleasantly surprised with what I saw Tuesday night. Kevin Owens, Charlotte, The New Day, Sami Zayn, even Rusev, and Lana, obviously.
Lana Lena, is that where it's going?
Possibly. But I think SmackDown won. To me, I think they restocked with some performers that they're really going to be able to do some creative things with. And for me, they were the clear winner. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think that there was a lot of rumor heading into here that, oh wow, SmackDown overachieved the last 9 months. AJ Styles was the face of that. Well, hey, what's Vince going to do? He's going to switch it up. He's going to pull him. He's going to put him on Raw, push the flagship brand forward. I like that we didn't see that. I think, you know, when you look at the biggest changes, which you sort of mentioned, Owens, Flair, New Day going to SmackDown, Raw picked up some names, of course. You're getting Ambrose, you're getting Wyatt, you're getting Miz and Maryse, Alexa Bliss. But when I look at the rosters, we've known SmackDown as the wrestling show compared to Raw, which is more 3 hours of variety, of selling things, of a lot of randomness. But when you look at SmackDown now as the wrestling show, they have, for my money, the best male wrestler in AJ Styles, now the best female wrestler in Charlotte, and really the only one who could really headline cards, headline even pay-per-views. And I think, Adam, the best tag team wrestling, when you look at now that you have the combination of the New Day, the Usos, and American Alpha, just from an in-ring product, man, that right there, that definition alone has to give SmackDown a big boost.
Well, they also have the best mic performer in Kevin Owens as well. So they have a guy who, you know, is currently the U.S. champ, and we'll see kind of how that shakes out with AJ and some of these weird stipulations and situations they have going on between the Raw and the SmackDown belts and Payback. And I'm sure we'll get to that, but you know, Kevin Owens, he's a main eventer, you know, in a mid-card role right now. So I don't think he should be discounted in terms of being a major acquisition for SmackDown. And maybe, you know, listen, I love Bray Wyatt, don't get me wrong, but the way he's been treated, you know, with losing basically every major match he's ever been in, I think Kevin Owens might be the number one acquisition overall when you talk about both brands and the entire shakeup.
I think that's a fair way to look at it. And he came out, you know, with the shaved beard, with the suit. It was almost like Jason Giambi going to the Yankees, right? And completely going with the corporate look. That's the way you phrase that. Yeah, he might be the biggest acquisition. I think I would lean Charlotte though, only because we know that the women's roster is, you know, much weaker in terms of overall balance. There's, for my money, two or three at most top level female superstars. I thought it was imbalanced the way that the draft played out, where Raw had the big stars with, you know, two or three, four names, but nothing else, where SmackDown had that balance. But man, now putting Charlotte on SmackDown, whether you want to do Charlotte Becky Lynch, whether you want to do, you know, Charlotte Natalya again, there's some big things you can do. I like that there's more balance, but they have the 1A main eventer on the women's side.
Oh, no question about it. And I'm enthused to kind of see what's going to be happening with the women's division on both. I think, honestly, addition by subtraction, getting Charlotte over from Raw to SmackDown as well, I think Alexa Bliss fits in perfectly with the Raw women's division, with Bayley, Sasha Banks, and everything that's going on over there. So I actually think it was the perfect switch. And I gotta be honest, I laughed out loud and had a great reaction to the swerve with Tamina that Shane did. Now, it kind of did ruin Charlotte's introduction a little bit, because all you really need is her music to hit and the crowd would have popped. So, it did ruin that, it did lessen that a little bit, but when he introduced Tamina Snuka, I legitimately laughed out loud, and these days it's really hard to get me to do that watching wrestling.
Oh, I know. Knowing you, it's harder for you to come around on some of those moments. And I thought that they did that tease properly with Teddy Long when they teased him as the new Raw GM the week before. They did it well this time around. But when you look at the rosters, here's one thing that stands out to me when I now look at the picture of who's on both sides. And I don't want to get my feels, my hopes up. I don't want to activate that feel spot too early. But Adam, Raw, hey, we got all three members of the Shield now. Are we going to do anything with that?
You know, they should, and it's going to be interesting to see if it plays into what, you know, the future of Roman Reigns. Certainly he would obviously have to be involved, but is that a move that's done for this year? And, you know, the upcoming rumored WrestleMania match with Reigns and Brock Lesnar, do you kind of use him and put him back in the Shield, have them be faces and have him possibly turn and become a heel? Do you have maybe Rollins and Ambrose go head to head for that long rivalry and maybe get Ambrose a little heel heat or something, because as a face, he doesn't work in my opinion. So I think those three being on the same show, it's great. Whether it's the Shield, whether it's just them working together and maybe ending some long-term rivalries, it's a good fit. Now, we also don't know how long Reigns is going to be out, if he's going to be out at all, after what happened on Monday, and we'll talk about that in a little while. But I think them being on the show together is fantastic. I'm sure you're enthused about it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to see where that goes. I still think that full Shield reunion is something that's not going to be seen for a way off. But if they can tease it, and they teased it well over the last year in certain spots, right? Like Survivor Series, they teamed up for that spot through the table. That alone was enough to just whet the appetite on where they're going. But when you look at the potential feuds now, we already see on SmackDown one that seems to be activated right now, which is AJ Styles versus United States Champion Kevin Owens. Not activated quite yet, because you sort of have, I want to say, this fishy situation, right? Like, I like when WrestleMania...
You can say it's bad. You can just say
it's bad. Yeah, you can say it's bad, right? Okay. When you begin and end a feud of WrestleMania, when that's the marker in the sand of when your year begins and ends, I don't like that Payback now becomes a waste. That's the next pay-per-view. It's a Raw pay-per-view. We'll see it the last day of April. You're seeing a lot of rehashed feuds now with people on opposite brands, so it doesn't make sense. So in the meantime, yes, Kevin Owens will be feuding with Chris Jericho. You really have to put all your money on the side to believe that Owens is going to retain that belt. But to set up a feud like they did Tuesday night, where AJ Styles wins a triple threat match in the main event to become the number one contender, you're now elevating that United States Championship to a level we haven't seen since Cena had the U.S. Challenge about a year and a half ago. But you're also asking yourself an interesting question here. Yes, Owens, AJ will be fantastic. Everything about it I love. Great talker against great in-ring worker, especially with AJ turning babyface. But what about this, Adam? What becomes of the WWE Championship?
You know, it's a strange scenario what they're doing with the WWE Championship and with the U.S. title. Now, they did guarantee, obviously, that the U.S. title is going to stay on SmackDown. So if Jericho wins, he goes over to SmackDown as well, which is interesting, but at least they clarified it. WWE title, they've given no clarification, and it sounds to me like if Wyatt wins the belt, it might go on Raw, and I don't know that's going to be the case, but the fact that they haven't clarified it, and they just refuse to give this type of clarity and be obvious with, these are our plans. Now, what a lot of people will tell you is maybe they don't know, and maybe they're not sure how it's going to work out, but I don't know why you continue a Wyatt Orton feud that lasted 7 months, into Payback when you're going to have one of those two guys, the challenger who's more over, the more over of the two, and who had the belt who you took it off, you're going to have him switch shows. So now it's up in the air again, and you're going to have a SmackDown belt, actually two now if you include the U.S. title, contested at a Raw pay-per-view when you're trying to keep them separate. So either make Payback a multi-brand pay-per-view and just have matches, and if you want to have these cross-brand matches, great, I love cross-brand matches, or don't. And just clarify the situation when you have these guys move rosters. So it just seems haphazard. It seems, again, like WWE is doing something where they don't put the full thought into it of how making move X affects Y and Z, and then pulling it down the line. And I think the sloppiness is just an issue that we've had with them for a long time going forward. But that said, look, I like the moves. I think you do too. It's just a matter of saying, okay, let's see how these next 3 weeks play out. Maybe it does all make sense in the end. Maybe we are being too critical, but that's also our job.
Yeah, and in my knee-jerk reaction to sort of, well, what did they do is, well, hey, we haven't seen yet where Brock Lesnar's going. Officially, we haven't seen which brand he's going to, but then I go, wait, he's got the Raw Universal Championship that's red.
Right.
We'll all remember that red belt getting nearly booed out of the building at SummerSlam last August. That red has to stay on the Raw brand. So that really leads you to believe that Randy Orton's going to retain the title and stay with SmackDown in this House of Horrors match. What, you know, whatever this ends up becoming and playing out at Payback later this month. So it's interesting. There's still a lot to be said. I don't like I said, extending these feuds into Payback doesn't make sense to me, but the timing of this shakeup did make sense because they never allowed that brand extension to feel stale. 9 months into it, it worked. It elevated many superstars. It made those in-between pay-per-views feel like they mattered. Whereas, you know, there was a lot of sins being done in prior years of brand extensions, right? That went from, what was it? It went on for about 6, 7, 8 years in a row. This one felt different, and I think restarting it right now is the perfect time.
Yeah, I have no issue with the timing of the extension, but just like you said, let's end some feuds at WrestleMania then. If you want to, you know, extend the brand or switch the brand, superstar, shake up, whatever you want to call it. If you want to do it, great. But let's do it where it's clean. So you're starting Raw and on a fresh slate and you're saying, all right, these guys are going here, these guys are going there. Maybe they should have done it immediately after WrestleMania. Maybe they shouldn't have waited this week. And instead of continuing some of those feuds and putting themselves in this tough spot, they're just immediately doing it. They're saying, look, the Raw after WrestleMania, it's going to be ridiculous. And here's why. Not only are we going to see NXT debuts and all this stuff that you have come to expect, you're also going to see superstars switch brand, and we're doing it the night after WrestleMania. So do that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And the only other sort of change I teased earlier is it looks like AJ Styles is a babyface now. And I think when you're shaking up superstars, when you're shaking up different spots and roles, that's the right move for WWE, because it's not that he was bad as a heel. I mean, AJ's the best talent in the company, in ring and maybe overall, if you want to argue that. He's just so much better as a babyface. I think it works for his personality, his character, for his merchandise. I think it's better when your best in-ring worker is a babyface. And I think now that he is, the handshake with Shane McMahon in the ring seemed to seal that the week before. Now moving forward, hey, man, there's some fun heels we can mix him up with. I mean, I think the most underrated development of this SmackDown, of the shakeup, was SmackDown getting Rusev. I'd pop for AJ and Rusev every day of the week.
Yeah, no, I love AJ as a face. I liked him as a heel. The only thing I don't like about AJ is his hair. Outside of that, everything he does is great. He really can do no wrong. He can play both sides. He has a great in-ring, you know, ability and repertoire. So do whatever you want with him. He can fill those gaps and be whatever SmackDown needs him to be at any given time. But with losing Cena and having him out of action for an extended period of time and bringing Wyatt to the other side, even though Wyatt technically was a heel, I have no issue with AJ filling in that role of the guy that fans can cheer for, because guess what? They cheered for him anyway when he was a heel. Sure, they booed him, you know, when he spoke, but in the ring, he's going to impress you one way or another. Just like Finn Balor, you're never going to really boo or hate Finn, because even if they turn him heel, whether with the club or in some other way, no matter what they do, when the guy's doing the coup de grace off the top rope or, you know, any of his other ridiculous moves in the ring, you're cheering for it because it's exciting and it thrills you. So, you know, that's always been a kind of a, you know, an issue with turning guys like that heel, but I thought AJ did well. He started off, he was a huge fan favorite. They almost immediately kind of turned him heel and put him with the club. They switched brands, so on and so forth. But I've been thrilled with what AJ's done from day one that he's gotten into WWE. And it just shows you what type of talent he is, that he, you could make an argument, is top 3, 4, maybe in many people's eyes, the number one talent in the company today.
Yeah, and the only problem I have with anything you said right there was, can a Demon King really be a babyface? I mean, that's a topic for a whole nother day, sure, but that's the main event. Adam, the co-main event this week is it a storyline from Raw that threatened to steal all of the headlines during a week that was so caught up in the superstar shakeup. Braun Strowman, yeah. Brutal attack on Roman Reigns. I think this was one of the better Raw segments with old school energy and feel that I've seen in a long time. From your perspective, what made this so special?
It was just intense and it was nonstop. Those are two things that I like. You know, there's so many Raw segments that are, there's a backstage attack and someone gets, you know, thrown into a garage door and flipped over a table, thrown into audio equipment, and that's it. And the guy's laying there, he's hurt, but Braun came back and he came back again and he flipped him over a loading dock. Then he flipped over an ambulance. I mean, they just kept building and building and building. And when you have a guy like Braun who has that kind of strength and ability, it's just impressive. And it was, once you thought it was over, he came back and it kept going. So for me, that's what made it so special. What about you? I assume it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's the way it escalated, right? It was like one pop built to another. And every time you go back to Twitter to give your reaction of how great that was, you know, you look up because you hear the noise on the screen. The feel spot is activated. Man, that thing just kept going. It did remind me of if I'm going to compare it to great segments recently, this was a more of a dialogue segment, but when Triple H and Mick Foley just in the past month had that back and forth in the ring with Foley end up bringing out Sacco, it had that feeling where it just kept getting better. Every time you think it hit its peak, it got a little bit better. My question here is how they filmed it. I thought they did it really well. Yes, you can break down the film Zapruder style and say, well, no, I don't think Roman was really on that gurney when it got flipped. And hey, the camera zoom was tight when he flipped the ambulance in the end, Strowman. So I'm not sure he didn't have help. I think overall, there wasn't a part of that though where I felt was weak. I felt I'm not a real cinematographic fan. Can we forget that moment ever happened? All I'm saying is that was pretty well done. Did it meet your expectations?
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm going to be honest. I do notice things like that, little things. The thing I did immediately notice is when they flipped the gurney over the loading dock. It was facing one direction, and then when they cut the camera angle to Reigns, it was facing the other direction. So if you're going to do that and you're going to, you know, make some of these cuts and do a fake dummy, you know, being thrown over there, at least get the direction of the gurney laying on the ground right. So that was my issue. But was there a crane helping with the ambulance tip it over? Probably. Was it propped up at some point? Maybe. I didn't care about that. None of it ruined it for me in the moment. I was still impressed, but I did rewind it because I was like, oh, I got to see that again. And the first thing I noticed was that gurney, you know, in the wrong direction. But outside of that, you know, who cares? I enjoyed it. I loved it. I know that for you, it is sounding like for you, it was your best segment of Raw in at least the last year, maybe since the last brand split. Am I correct about that?
Look, if you're going to put it up against the Festival of Friendship, it probably is hard to put that above that because, man, was that well done. But I'll say it's 1A or 1B, 1C. I mean, it's, you know, it's second or third right at the top conversation because it felt so old school. But it also, Adam, accomplished a couple things that I thought were really key. And here's my breakdown on that. I thought that Strowman won back all the heat that he had lost after that strong build only to lose clean to Reigns at Fastlane a month ago, and then also to be essentially demoted, enter into WrestleMania 33, which he was, by the way. He sure stepped aside to allow, in storyline form, he stepped aside to allow Taker and Reigns to do their business, got demoted to the Battle Royal, and then, you know, didn't even get that push in the Andre the Giant Memorial Jobber Battle Royal. I thought he won all that back with how vicious this was. And he also accomplished something that I'm sure you probably didn't enjoy, Adam, is that, hey, despite those teases, Roman Reigns, full-on babyface moving forward.
Yeah, he's a face, and they're not going to change that. But, again, the crowd with Reigns, the crowd can boo him all they want. As long as WWE can put Reigns in front of the sponsors and the charities and say, hey, this is a good guy, the kids like him, that's all they really care about. So anyone that's really legitimately thinking Reigns is going to be heel anytime soon, or Cena, you know, to the same end, it's not going to happen. I know Triple H, I think, recently came out and said something along the lines of, well, he gets booed, so isn't he a heel? And I thought that was a little disingenuous. No, he's not. We know he's not. We're smarter than that. You know, unless you're an 8-year-old kid watching, you know, you know better than that. But I agree with you. Strowman, everything that he had lost, which I didn't think was that much anyway, because if Reigns is the number one guy in the company, then, you know, losing to Reigns isn't the end of the world. But I thought Strowman was completely restored. He looks like a beast, and if they don't have a Lesnar-Strowman main event, beast versus beast match, I don't know what they're doing with him, because that to me is a no-brainer. What do you think? Do you think that Braun is ready for the main event level right now?
You know, I think he is, because look, is he ready on the mic? Character development? No, but physically he just offers something that it just, you know, is rarely ever out there. If ever, you know, Brock a little bit smaller, but Brock gave you that mixture of brutality, believable violence, and just off the charts athleticism. Now Braun's not the exact same athlete Brock is, but he's freakish. We've seen him do the kip up. We've seen him attempt off the top rope moves. He's ready for the main event level. That match in particular, when they do book that, is instant violence. It'll probably feel like a shoot in the same way that the WrestleMania 31 main event for a while, right? Roman versus Brock felt like a shoot. There was some hard way bleeding. This is going to take it to a whole new level when they book this. You think that though, that to wrap on Braun here, that he could get to the, like, what has to happen for him to maximize his full potential? Could are we really looking at the beginning of a rise to a guy who may end up being, it's tough to even say this, to make that leap, but one of the better big men of all time? Do you see any holes there?
Yeah, I really don't. I mean, he's athletic, he's strong, he has a good character. You know, once they moved him away from the Wyatt family, they've kind of brought him into this just, you know, they call him, what is it, Monster Among Men? Is that his name or whatever, his phrase? He kind of is. And when you tower over every single other person in the company except the Big Show, who we all know is kind of on the decline end of his career, you know, I think he's positioned to be someone who is just dominant, performer who's gonna be, I think he's gonna win the title at some point. He doesn't need a U.S. title or an intercontinental title. I think there's always those transitional champions. I think he's gonna be one of those guys that holds the belt for 2 to 3 months between, you know, a star losing it and getting injured maybe, and then a big time comeback who's going to win it off of him in a big moment, maybe like a Cena or a Reigns or someone like that. But he's going to get a title run at some point. I think Vince likes him. Obviously, he's getting pushed really strong. But in terms of being a main eventer though, I think there's two types of guys. There's guys that can hold their own against other big guys, Reigns, Lesnar, etc. And then guys who can also fight anyone at any time. I don't necessarily know that I want to see a Braun Strowman Seth Rollins main event at SummerSlam or something like that. That doesn't really interest me. But Strowman Reigns, Strowman Lesnar, that interests me. I'm here for that any day of the week.
Absolutely. Transitioning into this week's headlines, we'll run through a few of these things that are on the minds of a lot of people as we go through this week. Number one, Adam, SmackDown Live announcer Mauro Ranallo now not expected to return to WWE. We had a story on this. We had a source who essentially said while his contract confirmed by WWE is up this August, of course he signed in December of 2015, he will not be on TV through the remainder of that as things stand right now. There's a lot we don't know about this story, Adam, and that's the problem on reporting further until more is known. But what it appears, if you're following Mauro's Twitter account, disappeared from SmackDown in March, wasn't on WrestleMania. There's a lot of talk that there's a JBL involvement, that there's bullying. There's no confirmation on this outside of the prior history of some of the things JBL has done. How big of a loss is this for WWE in general, just to not having Mauro there in the booth any longer?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a loss. For me, he was a huge part of why SmackDown was so successful coming out of the gate with the brand split. Even, you know, working with Daniel Bryan on WWE Network, they were fantastic together. And look, I'm a Mauro fan. I'm not going to, you know, hide that. We watch boxing, you and I. He is on Showtime Championship Boxing. I love listening to him. He makes me more excited for the event and the match I'm watching every single time without fail. I don't mind his pop culture references. I don't mind him geeking out sometimes. He's fantastic at what he does. And for WWE to have gotten him in the first place, I thought was a huge coup. I didn't really know. I'm being candid. I didn't know he called New Japan Wrestling, you know, prior. I just didn't know that. So when I found that out, I was like, oh, then he, not only is he joining WWE as a guy who's a fight announcer, he actually knows wrestling and is going to be really good in this role. And guess what? He was incredible. I'm upset I'm not going to be able to hear Mauro call, you know, Kinshasa and Shinsuke. I want to hear him call more AJ Styles matches and Kevin Owens on the show now. That bothers me. I don't like it. But yeah, you know, look, you and I are going to speculate. We're going to go back and forth about, you know, storylines and things that happen, news items. But on something like this, it's rumor. And without having anything to legitimately back up some of these reports, we just can't talk about it to that end because it's not fair. It's not fair to Mauro. It's not fair to JBL, and it's not fair to WWE.
Yeah, and it's not fair that, you know, Justin Roberts comes out with his book. It's a great book, but it's talking about I think some of what came out of there is JBL potentially allegedly having a bullying role, you know, 13 years ago. You can't then just take that, mix it with rumors around Morrow, and necessarily have a story. I do think if this does escalate, then WWE is going to have a problem on their hands that will need to be, you know, looked into. The problem of sort of is the backstage culture of the old school way, the old Wild Wild West, does that need to be removed in today's society? That's a whole nother topic if we get there. But I think for just right now, big loss for WWE. Tom Phillips is a strong replacement in my mind. I think he's got some levels to improve still, but I think he'll be good in the long run, but he's not Morrow. Straight up, right? I mean, he's not Morrow.
He's not, and he won't be, and he's good. I like him a lot. I think he's going to do a really good job with SmackDown. WWE obviously felt comfortable enough with him to put him on that WrestleMania broadcast. Not that they really had that much option, but he did a great job. So nothing against him. He's going to be fantastic, but Morrow is just a different level. Let's move on to the second headline. I know that you compiled for us on this fine day. Finn Balor, we saw him on Raw take a major shot from Jinder Mahal, big time elbow, running forearm actually, right to the face. Looked like he got dinged a little bit, and PW Insider's reporting that he did suffer a concussion. How devastating of a setback would this be again for Raw and for Finn Balor with another injury if this keeps him out for a while?
This would be massive, and you really have to hope that this is not what it appears to be. I mean, you saw the marks on Finn Balor's face after this. I mean, our guy Hard Body Mahal was not fooling around. When they slow motion that replay, and I'm a little surprised that WWE did slow motion it, because you saw Balor's chin get jerked in a way that, you know, if you watch MMA and boxing, that's a knockout. That's a concussion right there. Hopefully it's not a long-term thing. Balor being out for the past 7 to 9 months was tough considering how hard they were pushing him in the beginning. It's probably going to be a day-by-day, week-to-week thing, but man, he looks sensational coming back. You just hope this is not the end of it. But moving on to headline number 3, Adam Forbes released their top 10 highest paid WWE superstars for 2017. At the very top, it's a flip-flop from the year before. Number 1 is Brock Lesnar at $12 million. Now, I don't necessarily know how they've found out. I read their criteria through backstage reports, through WWE corporate filings. They were able to bring this together. The Brock appears to include his UFC lump sum from last year, coming back at UFC 200, but $12 million for Brock at number 1. Cena number 2 at $8 million. You dip down to Triple H, $3.8 million at number 3. It goes on down the list. Reigns, Ambrose, Styles, Shane McMahon, Undertaker, Rollins and Orton rounding around the top 10. Any reaction to this? Any surprises here?
No, not really. I mean, assuming the Lesnar figure includes the UFC payment, so, and that was a large payment. So assuming that's in there, that makes sense. But if it doesn't, then I don't know how you're paying Brock Lesnar more money than John Cena, considering everything John Cena does for your country. And if I'm Cena, I'd probably be a little perturbed by that. But again, I'm assuming it does include that UFC figure like you suggested. And if it does, that sounds about right to me. You know, AJ, you could make an argument that he's really injected a lot of life into WWE, and maybe he can use that. You know, we also don't know what his merchandise deal is in terms of percentage. But maybe he could be up that list a little higher, but it's also year one, and you can't be too greedy when you just start with a new company. So,
but that's 11 matches, by the way, for Brock Lesnar last year to get to that total. I mean, yeah, that's some good money there. That's some part-time cheese. I think the Triple H and Shane were both making some good cash. So that seems to be just their talent payment for really limited roles overall. But hey, you're part of the family, right? I mean, but with membership becomes this type of privilege.
Yeah, and you know, Shane may only wrestle 4 or 5 times a year, but he's also jumping off cells and tables, and he's also however, I don't know how old he is, 45 at this point. He has kids and a family, and he is the son, so sure. And he's also serving the commissioner role as well, so it's not like he's not on TV all the time. He may not be taking the bumps that some of these other guys are, but he's older, he's been there for a while, there's some sweat equity. He just returned to the company, and Triple H, you know, he's gonna get whatever he wants anyway, so I have no issue with any of that.
Well, number 10 on this list was Randy Orton at $1.9 million. We'll transition to headline number 4. It involves the 13-time WWE World Champion. I think he's the best interview in the WWE because he doesn't really care about protecting company initiatives. I mean, he just brings it. In fact, we got to get him on this podcast. He's so good. This past weekend, though, he did a Q&A at Wizard World St. Louis. Adam, I have no idea what that means, but apparently it's comic book related.
Sure.
But the website, bleedingcool.com, gave a breakdown of what he talked about to a crowd which included a lot of children under 10. Orton openly said he loathed his WrestleMania 33 ring entrance, saying, as you remember, walking down the ramp, the video screen below him, it was a snake. He said it looked like a giant sperm, end quote. Orton went on to say he has no interest ever working with Brock again. No surprise.
Sure.
And if he could choose one former WWE superstar to wrestle again, it's Maven. Adam Maven. Tough Enough's Maven. He needs the same guy that The Undertaker destroyed at that Rumble one time. Like, what's going on here?
He wants to sell that dropkick is what he wants to do. That perfect, picture-perfect dropkick from Maven. You know, the Maven thing, I don't want to say it makes sense. Like, it doesn't. And obviously, he's, you know, having fun. But they were on WWE. They kind of debuted around the same time. You know, I actually was going back and watching some of that recently on WWE Network, and, you know, Orton, Cena, Maven, Nadia? I don't even remember her name, but she was Tough Enough as well. They were all kind of making their debuts, Batista, at the exact same time on WWE TV, so maybe they had a friendship, maybe they worked together a lot, you know, training in the ring, at developmental. I don't really know, but that's funny, and I can't really justify it, but Orton is a great interview, and I like that he's so candid and honest. He doesn't always toe the company line like a lot of other guys. Have you had the opportunity to interview him before?
I did. I had a great exclusive the night of the Royal Rumble after he won it inside the locker room with him. And I mean, he just brings it, right? Like he just straight brings it. And I mean, look like a giant sperm, end quote. That's absolutely fantastic right there.
Well, you know, but you know who else is another good interview? The Miz, isn't he?
Oh yeah, The Miz, man. We had him at Media Day this year. Those videos you can still find on CBSSports.com. That guy gets fired up, gets talking about sports. He'll tell you, you know, you want the guys they're not going to tell you the dirt behind the scenes, but they'll address it at least, right? They'll tell you the real deal of what it's like living this life, which is fascinating to a lot of people. But speaking of living this life, Adam, and putting out in the public forefront, our headline number 5 is, I don't know if you watch Talking Smack on Tuesday night after SmackDown, but Kevin Owens was on the desk. He started to congratulate Renee Young, and Shane McMahon kind of awkwardly stepped in and said, no, we're not going to talk about this right now, and instantly switched subjects. And it was a little bit like, you know, we know Talking Smack we love because it feels real life. It feels like a shoot. Well, Renee Young comes out on Twitter the next morning and kind of, you know, puts all the rumors to rest. He says, quote, marriage is nice. Thanks for all the love, end quote. Adam, it appears we have consummated completely if another full-on WWE power couple. We already knew they were together, but Renee Young and Dean Ambrose in marriage? Renanbrose? Is this what we're calling this? Do you care about this?
Yeah, I don't know what you call it. I care in the fact that Renee Young and Dean, you know, at least Renee, seems like a really good person, and she's been a breath of fresh air to SmackDown and WWE as a whole. So her being happy, whoever it's with, fantastic. Congratulations. But look, the couple stuff, unless you're going to play it out full-on air, Stephanie McMahon, Triple H style, I don't necessarily need it intertwined with everything else that's going on with WWE. And it's great. It's nice to know that people are happy in their personal lives and doing great things. But sure, great. Put it on Talking Smack. Discuss it. Don't discuss it. I really don't care.
I think this does put them higher up in the upper echelon of power couples behind Stephen Hunter, Nikki and John. Right there with Miz and Maurice. I'm not sure you really care about that. RIP to the former couple, by the way, Zack Ryder and Emma. That seems to be over. But let's move on already from this crap. Adam, let's get into this week to a segment I like to call Things You Don't Want to Hear. These are uncomfortable conversations about the current WWE product. We might draw some heat for this. You want to kick us off? What is something this week that we really don't want to hear?
Oh, you're putting me in the line of fire. Look, it's tough. I got to really come up with one. All right, if I'm being honest, look. We've discussed it already on this podcast. You and I have talked about it plenty. I am a huge Shinsuke Nakamura fan, Mark, whatever you want to call it. I'm a massive fan. Everything he did in NXT I thought was almost done perfect to a T, but I am not a fan of the way he has debuted on SmackDown. And look, I understand you kind of want him to play out the entrance the first night. Perfect. Great. They did it. Interrupting the Miz, you know, and having him kind of slink away from the ring. I don't necessarily know that was very effective. And the fans were there too, you know, quote unquote SmackDown after WrestleMania. They were chanting the music, chanting his name this past week on SmackDown. He only had to say 5 words, which we know Shinsuke doesn't speak a lot, you know, cause the a little bit of the language barrier. But he's a capable talker. He's able to get across some really good points when he's on the mic. But look, he's the king of strong style. So the reason why he's so popular is not just because he has that little bit of Michael Jackson, you know, really cool leather outfit, and because his music's amazing and because his ring entrance is fantastic. He's really popular because he's awesome in the ring and he beats the heck out of people. So we've gone 2 weeks on SmackDown with the debut of Shinsuke Nakamura. He hasn't fought. He hasn't thrown a punch. And even if WWE didn't want him to do that, you can air a package of his clips from NXT, from anywhere else he's wrestled that they have the rights to, and show SmackDown fans that don't watch NXT on a weekly basis who this guy is and why it's such a big deal that he's in WWE. Because right now, it's not a big deal to the average fan. They're like, oh, this guy looks pretty cool. Maybe he's going to be fun. Ziggler kind of no-sold him a little bit this past week. To me, the launch has been a C, when launching Shinsuke Nakamura on a WWE main roster should be an A-plus no-brainer success.
You know, this is a difficult conversation, but I really think you summed that up well, that this, it's just not working. And I think the key to what you said was what makes him great is that contrast between being almost effeminate, being like there's some weird sexual vibes in the way he dances and some things he does, but then you offset that with how physical his in-ring style is and how there's a almost shoot element. You know, he's a former mixed martial arts fighter himself. He's trained in many disciplines. When you don't have that proper balance, here's how he came off, Adam. He came off weird. He came off creepy. And when he did some of those creepy things, there was an endearing quality to it in the NXT arena, in the larger arenas for TakeOver, because of that entrance, because of the whole package. Having him speak with the mouthpiece still in his mouth this week, I think it just made him look weird, right? Like if you hadn't had that experience in watching him, this guy came across as a creeper. And I know it's funny. We can look back on like Shawn Michaels' gimmick in the early 90s and make jokes and be like, wow, he kind of looks like a male stripper. Well, if you didn't know anything about Nakamura and you just watched him this week, he probably looks like an absolute creep show, right? I mean, that's, I don't want him to feel like that.
Well, remember, the NXT fans also know who he is. They knew who he was before he got there. And they've now been with him for, you know, months as he was in NXT, dominating, winning titles, putting on the most incredible matches maybe that have ever been in NXT, you can make an argument. But the general WWE fan and the people that we're talking to right now may think we're being a little silly right now because they know who Nakamura is, but the general average WWE fan does not know who he is, where he comes from, and what he's about. I don't even think they've mentioned King of Strong Style, and if they have, I missed it, and they certainly haven't shown him being a dominant fighter in any way. So right now, you're right, they see a weird, you know, Japanese guy who's on TV doing cool, maybe kind of cool, weird things and coming out to an amazing music that the fans really seem to like, but they don't know why they're supposed to like him. So you need to give him that type of push, and just having him in the ring with Ziggler for a couple minutes while fans chant his name doesn't really do him justice. It really doesn't. Now, I've given my piece. Tell me, what is something that you don't think that wrestling fans want to hear?
Look, this is another uncomfortable conversation. Ty Dillinger got the call up from NXT, had a match this week on SmackDown, went over against Aiden English. But here's the thing, man. If you really look at Ty Dillinger as a whole, and we love his story, we love him overcoming not really having a strong gimmick or character after being in NXT for years and finding this 10 thing, and it works. But watching that match, it didn't pop, and I had this really bad feeling that although Ty's gimmick is great, the dude is on a one-way ticket to Jobberville, like on the main roster. And there's really no argument you can give me that will persuade me in the other direction, because here's his problem. He's no better than an average wrestler. He doesn't have that to fall back on. He's not a great talker. What does he have? He has the 10, and he has the way the Full Sail crowd accepted that and loved it and loved doing the hand gesture and sort of loved his story of finally finding that thing to get over. Vince buries guys like this on a regular basis. That's what Vince does. I love Tyler Breeze more than anything. Tyler Breeze is a much better performer and wrestler than Ty Dillinger. And Tyler Breeze is buried dressing up as Nikki Bella two weeks in a row, getting put in a female version of the AA. I don't know where this is going to go. And it's going to go bad, Adam, for Ty Dillinger. And I think it's tough to see, but it goes back to that scene in Billy Madison where the little kid looks at Adam Sandler and says, Billy, I can't wait to go to hike school, right? And then you're like, no, stay here. Stay. Once you leave NXT and leave those comfy confines and you get exposed, it's hard to go back. Ty Dillinger could have main evented there for another year. It's not his time.
Yeah, you know, I was a little surprised that he was brought up and not given the opportunity to main event in NXT. But you know what? There's some guys, and you're right. Look, he's not going to be a main eventer in WWE. He's not going to win the world quote-unquote WWE title now, or the Universal Championship. I think he has an outside opportunity to be a mid-carder, maybe along the lines of a Zack Ryder, who they can put into a, you know, ladder match, a seven-man ladder match at a big event, and can come out and win and maybe hold the belt for a week or two or a month. I think he's someone that fans can get behind because of his story, especially when they actually tell that on the main WWE broadcast, or
they decide to possibly give him a push. But yeah, Tyler Breeze, Fandango, you know, those are guys that have gimmicks that just aren't going to appeal to the average fan and are not going to last. Fandango, every single incarnation of his gimmick has not worked, and it never was going to. It just never was. And you knew from the minute that you saw him, this is not a guy who's going to be successful in WWE, at least not in his current gimmick. So maybe it's a situation where he's never a big main eventer, but I also don't think that every single wrestler that comes into WWE is going to be in that role. And there are some guys that need to know their role and shut their mouth in some manner, and he's probably one of them. And guess what? For him to have worked as hard as he did to finally get the spot on WWE's main roster, I don't think he's so worried about being buried right now. He's going to do the best job he possibly can every single time he gets an opportunity on SmackDown. Fans can get behind guys like this. We've seen it. You know, Daniel Bryan, significantly more talented, better gimmick, better on the mic, better in the ring. But fans totally got behind him and pushed him from someone who was going to be a mid-carder to a main eventer at WrestleMania. So maybe that's never going to happen with Diligent, but he's going to get some opportunities. As long as fans stand behind him, I think it's possible. It can work. I'm not as down on him as you are.
That was fair.
But I
agree. Adam Silverstein, that was a fair and sober, balanced comeback right there.
Am I not fair and sober? Is that, are we telling people that I'm not normally that way?
No, I'm not talking about your blood alcohol level. I'm just saying that was respectable to come back. I still think he's headed to his Joubert land, but that's probably my issue. Look, probably. Let's transition into a weekly segment we want to do called Booking the Damn Territory. Putting on our creative hats. Look, they don't let us by the pool these days with Pat Patterson and Pritchard and Vince. You know, we haven't gotten that type of inside access yet, although I'm still really, Adam, holding out for that.
Sure.
This week, though, I've got an idea to reboot something because, Adam, my issue, and I say this a lot, one of my issues is there's not enough strong factions that hang around for a while and have an impact. Like, you could just point to the League of Nations, right?
A
couple year and a half ago, came together, didn't do anything, fell apart. I think even the Wyatt family, which should be a strong dominant heel, just randomly breaks apart every 6 months with no rhyme or reason to it. I think you're seeing something built strong with Sanity and NXT, but outside of that, Adam, we have nothing to point to unless I'm glaringly missing something. Why not reboot the Four Horsemen? And the reason, and no one likes reboots, but I think this could work. And the reason why I say that, watching the push that the Revival got in the first 2 weeks of Raw after they got called up, you're watching Dash and Wilder. They have such a Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson vibe to them. And I've talked to them about it. They both grew up in North Carolina. That's Flair country, right? That's NWA, WCW territory. They say that their greatest influence was the Rock and Roll Express. They respected Tully and Arn, the Four Horsemen. Why not put them as the muscle, the workers? Cause they're mean. They're perfect for this in a rebooted Four Horsemen with Dolph Ziggler playing the Flair role. And then for that fourth spot, at first I was thinking, maybe a Rusev, but look, his personality doesn't really work. A guy on Twitter, Jay Sims, came at me with this. Why don't you put Charlotte as the fourth member? Why don't you go full circle with this idea, B-Cams? Why don't you do it? Adam, yes or no on booking this in the future? A reboot of the Four Horsemen with the Pretty Boy Ziggler, the legacy of Charlotte Flair, and the Revival. Breaking people's ankles, going around, living the life, wearing the suits. This cannot fail, or can it?
No, it can fail because you're immediately throwing Dolph Ziggler in here. And you know, and this is something that anyone that's read my WWE writing on CBSSports.com before Brian Campbell joined us, you know, thank God, but even still now, knows I do not believe WWE is ever going to give Dolph Ziggler a legitimate push in any possible way again. I thought there was a chance they might do it at SmackDown when he first went over there and was immediately in the main event picture. I saw how that turned out. Crushed my hopes again. So if you have Ziggler in this group, I don't think it's going to happen. What I do love about your booking the damn territory for a new Four Horsemen, the revived Four Horsemen, if you want to call it that. I love the Revival in it. I think they're perfect. And I love Charlotte leading it. I love it being a mixed, faction, not just being all men. I love the idea of having Charlotte in there. So do I think it could work in general? Yes. I think Charlotte would be the right head honcho for it, and the Revival would be a perfect tag team for it. But I disagree with that fourth spot. I don't know that I have the answer for you in that other spot, but I do know that is not Dolph Ziggler.
Well, I think you're going to have Rick, the legend himself in the J.J. Dillon spot. But man, I'm getting fired up. The fuel spot has been activated just thinking about this. But Adam, it's not time to go home yet. Just yet. We're getting closer though. Let's hit up a new segment, Hero or Zero. Quick hits here. Is this working or not? I want to go back and forth with you. I'll hit you with the first one. Number one, is this a hit or a miss? Kurt Angle as Raw GM 2 weeks in.
Oh, it's a hero, and it's true. It's damn true. Look, Kurt Angle, fantastic. What I think a lot of people were so concerned about Angle returning to WWE and getting in the ring. And what they forgot about Kurt Angle is he's fantastic on the mic. He's legitimately funny, and he has developed that type of personality and character over his entire career in professional wrestling. You know, he didn't start out necessarily that way, but he has gotten to a point where he's fantastic. So for me, it's a massive, massive hero. What about you?
Yeah, right with that. And I think the key for me is something I wrote last week is Angle's so underrated as a comedic worker. Like, right. You never talk about it enough because you're remembering the fact that he's got 5 or 6 great WrestleMania matches in that short 8-year window that he had with the company. He's pulling it off. I mean, the way he sort of deadpanned Enzo and Cass in his backstage debut there while they're giving him their shtick was perfect. Angle's working out for me up to this point. You want to slow build toward a big match, maybe next year's WrestleMania. I am A1 on board with this.
Yeah, now I'm going to deliver the next one to you. TJ Perkins this past week started turning heel, maybe fully turned heel, with some help from Neville, kind of convincing him that he's not being respected by the rest of the cruiserweight division. Hero or zero?
Oh, dude, hero, big time hero. Look, you know, I'm going to be a little bit too fired up for this because I'm a protector of all things cruiserweight and 205. I think there's a lot of hidden potential there, a lot of great workers. TJ Perkins is one of the best workers in the company. No one wants to believe that. Did his babyface gimmick not work because it was a cheesy video game, a guy coming out dabbing? Yes, 100%. But that same shtick works perfectly as a heel because you'll want to hate it. This guy's like unaware of how cheesy he is, yet really good in the ring. The execution of this was strong, and now you've got some weird potential. I'm always going to reference back to the 90s because that's what I do. But how about Neville in the role of almost a Raven-esque flock leader of maybe turning a few more of these good guy, you know, vanilla cruiserweights onto the dark side? We could have something here. I thought the main event this week on 205 Live with TJ Perkins against Jack Gallagher was very well done. To see TJP walk away with Neville at the end, that gave me the feels, man. This is working.
Yeah, you know, for me, I'm kind of tentative to really care about the cruiserweights right now. I have a lot of issues with what's going on there. Namely, for me, just separating the division. I don't care about the purple ropes, and I don't need the separate logo and all the gimmicks. I don't need the gimmicks with the cruiserweights. Just give me really good wrestling in the ring on any show at any time. I don't care. That said, one of the biggest issues I had, aside from that, was that there weren't enough characters. I don't really care about these guys. They didn't really have personalities. So I'm going to give it a hero. But I'm going to give it a hero because they're doing something from a character development standpoint. And if it goes into a flock type situation with Neville as the Raven, great. That's fantastic. Just do something. Make me care about these guys' characters. I know they're great in the ring. You don't need to sell me on that. Sell me on storylines and that I care about them being part of the show. And I'm not just going to fast forward it or go to the bathroom or make dinner or whatever the case is, you know, during their segments.
Cause you'll do that. You'll make dinner during 205 Live and not even think twice about it. I've seen that. I've heard about that happening. Look, Adam, as we transition to number 3 here, Matt Hardy, the big return of the Hardy Boys, the biggest pop at WrestleMania 33, but he's only semi broken so far because of the possibility of that lawsuit from TNA Impact Wrestling owner Anthem Sports. They say they have the broken Matt, the Brother Nero character on lockdown. The Hardys say they don't. You're probably going to see a long battle there. We've seen a little bit of the broken Matt, but hero or zero so far at him really getting over and making an impact when he can't do the full broken.
You know, I think it is too early to grade. Now, I'm going to give one because this is what the segment is, but you're putting me in a corner. I think it is too early to say one way or another because the truth is he's either going to be able to use it or he's not. And those are going to be two vastly different things. I'm going to say it's a hero right now because, look, the Hardy Boys have returned. The fans love it. They're fantastic in the ring. Matt looks a little different. You know, if you're a casual WWE fan, you don't know why he looks a little different or why he's acting just a little different. And you also don't know if WWE is going to say, well, screw them and kind of just go with this gimmick and they're going to build to it. Because here's the thing. The Hardys have been on 3 shows, WrestleMania and 2 Raws. They haven't said a word. They haven't had mic work. They haven't had a backstage interview. They've had some stuff on YouTube and WWE.com. But on the Raw, the TV fan hasn't seen or heard from them. So I think WWE is doing that on purpose. They're saying, look, we're kind of working through this. Maybe they are going to make a payment. Who knows? But the fans want to see a reincarnated Hardy Boys. They want to see Broken and they want to see Brother Nero. And right now they're not really getting it. So there's a little bit of tentative for me giving it a hero grade, but I'm going to.
But you know the fear though, if he doesn't become fully broken, this is the Dudley Boys reboot from 2015 all over again. It's not going to be matter and they're going to be gone. But if he gets the full broken treatment and if they can start doing weird video packages like he did in TNA, he could be what Bray Wyatt still hasn't yet become. And I mean that. He could be that transcendent of a character leading a faction, changing the way people talk. I mean, his promos, I mean, it could be incredible. It's a hero by default now, but man, there's potential for more.
Yeah, I think the potential is there, like you said. And that potential being out there is why I'm not really gung-ho on the hero. But look, the Hardy Boys being back, it's nice that they're here. We're happy to see them. But you're right. The Dudley Boys' return did not go well, and that is what this is in danger of becoming, especially once they take the titles off them. That's really the scary part. So let's move on to the number four category here in this Hero or Zero segment. We're going to talk about Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski and his current, role with WWE. Now, it's short. It's probably going to come to an end after this past week, but we've seen him a couple times now helping out Mojo Rawley. Hero or Zero, Rob Gronkowski in his current role for these last couple of weeks in WWE.
Full-on hero all the way. Look, it was probably perfect timing that he debuted at SmackDown when it was in Connecticut. He was on SmackDown again this week when it was in Boston. It made sense, right? He went to WrestleMania with his good friend Mojo Rawley. This is a hero, and I'm a sucker, of course, for celebrity crossover like anybody else, but Gronk has the size, and dude, he's got the charisma. He's got better charisma than than most of that locker room, right? I mean, he is a top-shelf, grab-your-attention type of guy. The shoulder tackle was fine at WrestleMania. You don't want to put him in much more than that. I thought this week was the proper escalation. He threw the beer back in Jinder Mahal's face. I like where they're going with this. If I can book the damn territory for one quick second, how about this for WrestleMania? Tag team match. Gronk and Mojo on run side, then Jinder with the surprise opponent. Oh, by God, it's Aaron Hernandez's music, the former Gator.
God, no.
Too soon? Come on,
Too soon because he's not getting out of jail for the rest of his life. But look, for Gronk, for me right now, I'm being honest, it's a zero. And I love Gronk, the tight end on the Patriots. I'm a Dolphins fan. I hate when he plays against me. But as a football player, I love this guy. The entire act outside of the football field, I really could care less. Go do you, Gronk. It's fantastic. But if you're going to be in the WWE, then be in the WWE. Sign a contract, be a WWE superstar, go to NXT, or go at least train in developmental, and be a member of this organization. Because guess what? Rob Gronkowski is going to be in the WWE one day, full time. And when he is, he's going to be amazing. But right now in these little bits, especially this many times, it was great at WrestleMania. I didn't need to see him again on Raw.
Wow.
You want to continue it? Sure, whatever. But I don't need this as part of my wrestling every single week. If you want to be in WWE, get in the ring, be a wrestler, because he's going to be one day, and it's going to be awesome when he is. Right now, I don't need it.
Wow, to quote the great John Pazullo of CBS Sports, you said it, but you don't mean it, Adam. You can't mean it. I'm loving this so far, but look, it's elevating Mojo Rawley. I think that's a good thing overall. Our final hero or zero of the week, Adam, I think I can guess where you're going to go with this. Former vaudevillian Aiden English returned to his NXT original gimmick this week on SmackDown, losing to Ty Dillinger, but coming out and singing now that Simon Gotch has been let go of the company the week before. Hero or zero on a new Aiden English?
So I'm giving it a zero, and I feel bad for Aiden English. I mean, what do you want this guy to do in a 1 week's notice? You have to revert to that. But what WWE needs to do is get this guy back out of SmackDown. Put him back in NXT, let him develop a new gimmick, whether it's a new tag team or a solo gimmick, let him develop and change his wardrobe and just do something different. Give him opportunity number two. Because if you still like this guy and you want him to be part of your organization, he's not going to succeed doing what he just did. The Vaudevillians, I've told you previously, great, it was a cool kind of kitschy gimmick in NXT. They never should have been moved to the main roster with that gimmick. It would never have worked in any era, especially this one, maybe that 90s era. You know, with Bret Hart, you know, in that transition time before the Attitude Era, maybe
with George Hackenschmidt in the 20s, that would have worked, right?
Maybe in the 20s it would have worked. But right now, the Vaudevillians was not going to work. His current gimmick's not going to work. It's a zero. It's less than zero. I can't even see it. It's so zero. What about you? But just give this guy the opportunity to retool himself.
No, zero. This guy's lame. Moving on, just like that. Well, on the way out here, right in the feel spot is my favorite segment of the week. What moment just touched me as just a pure wrestling fan, not a smark, not a journalist or faux journalist or whatever you want to do. I mean, come on, pro wrestling is entertainment. We love what we're doing here, but we're all fans. My right in the feel spot moment this week was that tag team title match on SmackDown Live, the rematch, the Usos against American Alpha. I had the privilege of being in the crowd on SmackDown a few weeks ago when the Usos went over and won the belts. That was a fantastic top shelf match. They rebooted it this time. Adam, I think it was as good or better. It's old school tag team wrestling, yes, with the quick changes, but it's just great wrestling, and WWE doesn't always feature great wrestling. Great athleticism, but anybody who watches independent wrestling know that there's much better wrestling around the world. This was just great wrestling in every possible category. The Usos obviously rebranded as heels are much better. Alpha can work with anybody. You had the perfect amount of near falls that I mean, I really believed Alpha was going back over three separate times. They totally hooked me as a fan, caught me right in the feel spot. It was a great match. It had a pay-per-view feel on SmackDown Live, and you don't always get that. Big fan of this week. Over the top whatsoever. Braun maybe challenged it, but this tag team match as a pure wrestling fan had me fired up.
It was really terrific. And you know what? They've now had three matches together in the last, whatever, 5 weeks or so that have all been outstanding. And what'd you say? You called it a pay-per-view match? That match should have been on WrestleMania, not the pre-show. They should have had the Usos and American Alpha. I said it before WrestleMania. I couldn't believe it wasn't on the card at all. I couldn't believe they made the title change before WrestleMania. That is a WrestleMania match. It's a classic, great tag team match between arguably the two best tag teams in the country. I mean, not country, in the company. For me, that's a WrestleMania match. No brainer. It's a great feud. I love the Usos as heels, as you said. Yeah, did I catch the feels for it? I did. You know, like I just said, when you want to watch pure wrestling and you want to watch pure tag team wrestling, Alpha and the Usos, they know how to do it. They put on a fantastic show, and WWE just buried it. And we're going back into the booking like we talked about earlier in the show. They make these little tiny mistakes that cost them in the long run. You could argue that women's match, I know there was a big fervor about it being on the kickoff show. It probably should have been on the kickoff show. And that's nothing against the women. They would have had 20 minutes, 25 minutes to put on a really good match and really entertain the crowd and been given a spotlight as fans were filing in. And this is the type of show that we're going to expect. Instead, they got 8 minutes on the main card. Well, this match, they could have given 13, 14 minutes on the main card of WrestleMania, and it would have rivaled for one of the best matches on the entire show.
Adam, quick on the way out, a little bit of superlative action right here. That's my match of the week. I assume that tag team match was yours. Who's your MVP of the week, just looking at it as a whole?
Oh, that's a good question. It has to be Braun Strowman, I think. I could go with maybe an Owens or AJ Styles. He did win the number one contendership at the close of SmackDown, and he was strong on the mic earlier in the night, and he was featured on SmackDown plenty. But Strowman, man, that was awesome. And, you know, we talked about it before. I'm not going to go into the details. He was fantastic, and this was Braun Strowman's week. What about you?
I'm right with you on Braun. No, absolutely no brainer. On show of the week, I think I like SmackDown a little bit better than Raw overall.
Yeah, probably. Especially because I was so annoyed with the entire superstar shakeup, lack of explanation, and it kind of started on Raw, and I was kind of sitting there waiting for something major to happen, and it really didn't, outside of the ambulance situation with Strowman and Reigns. There really haven't been developments in the two main event pictures on either show. So if you're talking front to back entire show, yeah, I'd probably go with SmackDown. It was 2 hours or shorter. They packed in just as many changes and more storylines and a better match.
Were you looking for, from that superstar shakeup real quick, were you looking for more of like a desk overlooking the arena, more of a real sports feel, have like the general manager come up to a podium, but you know, Bad News Barrett style? What were you looking for to make it more legitimate?
Yeah, I didn't need that. I mean, look, they had the WWE draft and they treated it like a draft. Great. I like when they integrate sports elements, real sports elements into the broadcast. So I loved the draft as they did it. Yes, there were problems with the draft, the 2-for-1 picks and all that crap. There were issues. But this, they basically didn't tell us what this was going to be ahead of time. Vince just came out and announced, oh, we're going to shake up the rosters. And then you go to their website and it says there's going to be moves, trades, and deals. So I didn't need them to come out, but they could have had the two general managers or the two commissioners or whomever sitting at the back of the table on the phone. You hear them conversing, dealing back and forth. Maybe they announce a trade, Dean Ambrose for Kevin Owens. That was probably a deal, right? Because the IC title and the US title. So why not announce that those guys were traded for each other? Why not announce that Charlotte was traded for Alexa Bliss, or, you know, they traded these three singles wrestlers for the New Day? There were a lot of things they could have done to really tell us, like, this is why these moves were made and why you should care. And it also would be a storyline thing. If Dean Ambrose is pissed that he got traded for Kevin Owens, he thinks he's that much better, that's a motivating factor. Maybe that's a cross-brand match in the future. So there's just a lot of missed opportunity by just putting people on shows and not explaining how or why they're there.
Yeah, I'm with you on all that all the way. And shout out to my guys, by the way, the shining stars of Puerto Rico, the evil timeshare salesman. They got the run-in treatment in the jeans, shirtless, beating down American Alpha. The New Day just got a in-passing promo that said they're coming to SmackDown. Shout out to Primo and Epico. Maybe there's some bit. And by the way, Dolph Ziggler put them over so unnecessarily on Talking Smack. I totally enjoyed that all the way. But Adam, that's about wrapping up this first episode. I think we came with an overhand right. I want everybody to go out there. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at @BCampbellCBS. Adam's at Silverstein Adam. Adam, there's one more thing I want them to do. If you, they say if you see something, say something. If you like this, if you heard what you did and you liked it, do something about it. Go to iTunes. Give it the 5-star review. Give it a rating. Share your thoughts. Hit us up on Twitter. Tell us what you like and don't like, what you want to see on this podcast. Look, we're going to bring it, right? We're going to bring it. Absolutely. Some of it's going to hit the wall. Some of it's going to fall out. But you know I'm coming swinging.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I'm thrilled to be here. This is my first, podcast that I'm a part of on a regular basis. To be here with you talking wrestling, WWE, it's fantastic. But yeah, listen, if you don't tell us what you do and don't want to hear, we're not going to know. And we're just going to keep doing our thing as we have been. If you think what we did was perfect today, great. Tell us that. We love the praise. But if you want to hear more, if you want to hear interviews, you want to hear different segments, you want to hear us be more critical or more praiseworthy, tell us what you want. We will try to fill that in for you.
Absolutely. We'll be having interviews in the future. You'll be seeing more of In This Corner with Brian Campbell podcast covering boxing, covering mixed martial arts. A lot more to come in the future. This was the kickoff WWE, the superstar shakeup. Adam, thanks so much for joining me.
It was great. And like Brian said, subscribe to this podcast, iTunes, everywhere else.
We out.
Later.